Welcome to the Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Susan Orlean has been one of America's most beloved chroniclers of the curious, the creative, and the quietly extraordinary. Her journalism, spanning decades at The New Yorker and across several celebrated books, has introduced readers to subjects as varied as orchid smugglers, legendary animals, library arson, and the idiosyncratic corners of American culture that most of us pass by without noticing. With her new memoir, Joyride, Susan Orlean turns that exquisite lens inward. Joyride offers a portrait of a writer navigating the joys and complexities of reinvention, risk-taking, and creative persistence. It is an absolute pleasure to have you join me in welcoming Susan Orlean to this week's book show. Well, it's a delight to have you here. Thank you so much for being with us, for being here in Saratoga. And I'm so happy to talk about this book. I think there are many of your books that we haven't talked about over the years, either in person or over the phone. But it's a delight to talk to you about this one because I learned so much about you. At what point did you think to yourself, oh, that may be a good idea?
To write a memoir?
Yes.
I've never thought it was a good idea. No, what happened was I had begun thinking about writing a book about writing. And the more I thought about it, the more it sounded like the process of writing a book about writing wouldn't be very interesting. It sounded really pedantic and dry. And at that same time, I was reflecting on this astonishing realization that I had written The Orchid Thief 25 years earlier. And I was so struck by that. It seemed so monumental. So it put me in the mind of kind of reflecting on that period of time. And The Orchid Thief wasn't even my first book. But I just thought, boy, I've been doing this a long time, and I've collected so many stories, not only what's on the page, but the stories of how I did those stories. And it occurred to me that I could write a book about writing that, at the same time, sort of traced the path that I've taken and be a conversation with readers that was more personal than what I'm usually doing.
Right. There is a path, too, isn't there? I mean, if you look at the stories that you started writing, and even with this book, there is very much a path of what you look for and how you look at it.
It's shocking to me how consistent I've been. When I look back to the first published pieces that I wrote, which came out in 1978... And yes, there really was a year, 1978. It's hard for me to believe. But the way that I was drawn to stories remained consistent through that whole time, which surprised me. I think what happened is when I got my first writing job, I was right out of college. I had no experience, and I was hired at a very small startup magazine, and all of a sudden I was a writer. I wasn't a secretary, I wasn't a messenger, I was actually the writing staff of this magazine. And the axiom that's usually told to young writers is, write what you know. I thought to myself, I don't know anything. I'm 23 and I don't know anything. But I knew that I did know one thing, which was I knew how to learn things, and I knew how to respond to wanting to learn about something. So I set out immediately looking for those stories that I knew nothing about, but that I wanted to know something about. And sometimes they were big ticket stories that seemed kind of big headline, but more often they were not. More often they were something that was part of the texture of everyday life that no one had actively sat and thought, let me examine this, let me think about this and see what it's all about.
At 23, say, would you have self-identified as a curious person?
Yes, I think I would have. I think I've been a curious person from day one. I think it's just my nature. I like learning new things. I like being surprised. I like the comfort of familiar things, of course, but I can't help but be drawn to something that I don't know, or traveling somewhere I've never been, or experiencing something I've never experienced. I'm really drawn to that.
At what point in that time did you think, okay, this is, I found it. This is what I want to do, and this is what I'm good at.
Well, I think I first began by thinking this is the thing I want to do, and that had two really important moments. One, when I was really young, and my parents got Life magazine. And Life magazine back in the day was really a good magazine, had great photography, but they also did a fair number of stories that were what we would now consider narrative nonfiction, kind of documentary style stories. So at one point when I must have been an early teenager or younger, perhaps, I came across a story in Life magazine. There was a photograph of a man in medical scrubs looking exhausted. And the story was about a small town doctor. And it was simply a kind of recounting of the day in the life of a small town physician. And it was everything from delivering a baby to telling someone they have cancer to stitching up a knee. You know, it was this whole range of human experience. I read that story and I thought, wow, you can really write a story about this. Nothing dramatic happens. The person, the subject of the story is not famous, but his life is so complex and fascinating. This kind of hung in my head as this is something that would be amazing to do. And some years later, I had begun subscribing to The New Yorker and read a story in The New Yorker about three brothers who were superintendents of three different apartment buildings in New York City. And it really was just a story about them running their buildings, their interaction with each other. Again, they weren't famous, they weren't celebrated in any way, but they were very much the masters of their universe. I loved that story and read it and thought, I want to do this. Did I think I could be good at it? I didn't even allow myself to wonder about it. I just thought, I want to do this. And I think part of being good at it is wanting to do it.
And the fact that that was a story that caught your eye gives us an idea of what you were interested in and what it was. You could take that situation and make something of it.
I felt that in each of these stories, you actually were looking into a whole world. And you might not think it if you go talk to the super of your building and tell him your, you know, heater isn't working. But in fact, they're running this complicated entity of an apartment building. And I loved the way you saw a whole universe. And there were many times when I thought I could have done a very different career path. I could have been a travel writer and just gone on lots of cool vacations, or been a celebrity profiler, and I've certainly done my share of it, but you can do that for a living and you get to meet lots of famous people. But I never had that feeling of this is what I want to do, or even this is what I'm uniquely capable of doing.
You write in the book, wait, have I forgotten to mention how much fun it is? Being a writer is so much fun. It's make-a-wish for the curious.
It really is. I sometimes am humbled by realizing how crazy it is that I can conjure a thought, like, I really want to learn about taxidermy. And the next thing I know, I'm learning about taxidermy. Maybe that doesn't appeal to everybody here, but to me, it was extremely exciting. If I can think of it, I can write a story about it.
Susan Orlene is our guest. The new book is Joyride. You write, I would like to hang out with backpackers in Bangkok. I want to learn about gospel music. I'd like to meet a woman who has 27 pet tigers. I want to meet an umbrella inventor, Maui Surf Girls, Bill Blass, a high school basketball team. What amazes me in that, and you write about it in the book, is not only do you have those ideas, which in and of itself is interesting, and that's curious, but you ask someone and say, I'm going to write about this, and they let you.
Right.
And they pay you, and they send you out in the world to do it.
Yes, this is shocking, even I will admit. And looking back over the arc of my professional life, I feel that I have been unusually fortunate. And I'm afraid that good fortune is probably in a dwindling supply in the world that we're in today. Even so, you know, within the world of people working regularly as journalists, I felt extra lucky. I felt like I could come in with a sliver of an idea. And almost always, I was given the go-ahead, go figure it out. Yeah, I would rarely know a lot about the subject. When I did the story that was the first iteration of The Orchid Thief, you know, I had found a newspaper that mentioned that a guy had been arrested with rare orchids coming out of a swamp in South Florida. I didn't know more. You have now heard everything I knew. And I went into the magazine and said, I don't know what this is about, but I think it's really interesting. And my editor said, go look into it. So I really had this incredible good fortune of an editor and a magazine that was comfortable saying, go find out if it's a story. And if you need time, take the time you need. Does that still exist? Probably less than it used to. We're just in a different era. And back when I started writing, no one dreamed that you could measure reader attention the way it's measured now. And to say, well, somebody read the first sentence but didn't read the second sentence, and that algorithmic decisions are a reality.
Well, I don't like that.
Yeah, no, it's a scary thing, but I'd like to believe that if someone really still had the passion for the stories, that they would come to a magazine saying, I'm dying to learn about this, that they'd be given the freedom to do it. But it's not a guarantee.
In Joyride, I was fascinated as you were telling the story of the orchid thief, because you see that clip and you go from there. But then you tell the story in the book, and this comes up a couple of times, where you have an idea of a story, but sometimes reality gets in the way and it doesn't, and you're like, oh. But then you're able to still continue and find another path to make that a story.
That has happened to me many, many times. I I've come to feel in a way that it's good when that happens. I think you begin a story with an idea of what it's going to be. And if you really know what it's going to be, probably it's not that interesting. If you can predict before you actually go out and learn about the story and you can kind of write it in your head, then I don't think it's all that interesting. Instead, I think stories usually have, there's a moment where they throw you on your back foot and say, it's not what you thought. And your first impulse is, I give up. And I was talking to someone today about how often that has happened to me, where the story just literally fell apart right away. And my impulse is, you know, on one hand to say, I give up, this isn't turning out the way I expected. And then if you're patient, often you begin thinking, well, why did it fall apart? What about this caused it to have this collapse? I'll give you an example. And this included embarrassment on my part, but I was asked to profile a young woman who was a matador, a bullfighter in Spain, and she was had become very popular. She, you know, was really prominent and fighting in all these bullfights all over Spain. And so I was asked to profile her, and I thought, that sounds interesting. I'll go for it. And I don't remember now exactly how I got in touch with this guy, but I got in touch with a guy who said, oh, I'm her agent and her manager, and I can set you up with all the time you're going to spend with her and the interviews and lock it down, all set up, fly to Spain, call the guy, can't reach him, discover he is not her manager. He was posing as her manager. And I thought, oh my God, I was so embarrassed. I called my editor and I said, I'm here in Spain. I don't have any interviews. I have nothing because this guy scammed me. My editor, to his credit, said, well, like, give it a day. Because I was ready to just say, I'll get on the next plane. I'm sorry. It's really embarrassing. And in fact, the photographer left. He said to me, I just met a woman I really like, so this story isn't working. I'm going home. And I thought, oh, great. Thanks.
Good for you.
But then I started thinking, why, you know, anyone who has gained so much prominence in pop culture that people are pretending to be her manager, that tells me something. That her prominence is even greater than I had imagined, that she's actually attracting this kind of complexity in her life. And I thought, let me just give it a day. And I had hired a translator because I don't speak Spanish. And my translator, who's from New Jersey, said to me, well, you know, my husband is a former bullfighter. And I thought, that's not a sentence you hear that often. And I said, well, can you ask him if he knows anyone who knows someone who knows Christina? And then maybe we can somehow get me in touch with her. Luckily, it worked. And I, through, you know, this chain of connections, managed to connect with her and get time with her. But this was a great example of the story. You know, I thought I was going to waltz in. I had everything set up, easy, no sweat. And instead, I really got thrown for a loop and then had to start thinking, okay, what does it mean? What can I do with this? And can I still make something of this story?
So, I mean, you tell a story later on, I think it's with the surfers, the women surfers.
Yeah.
And you say, okay, I want to go interview. And then turns out, by the time you get to the story, the surfer said, "Man, I'm not doing this anymore."
Right. That was perhaps one of my all-time biggest, like,
but
story.
But you find other surfers. This isn't the only one doing this.
Right. Well, what was funny is that I had this idea to write about these girls in Maui who were really into surfing, which was somewhat unusual at that time. I mean, women weren't surfing much at that point. So I have this list that I had procured from my editor, I think, of these girls who were supposedly the hotshot surfers in Maui. I get there and every girl I called said, "Oh, I'm not into it anymore. Like, I'm much more into going to the mall." And I was like, "No, what is going on?" I called my editor, and again, it was the sort of thing where I thought, I flew all the way to Maui, and the story is falling apart. She said, "Take a day, enjoy the beach, you know, do what you need to do." Well, there was one girl who I hadn't called because she was a body surfer, and I was really looking for girls who were surfing.
Right.
And I was really blue about this story falling apart. So I called her, and I think I said to her, I screwed up. And she said, "You sure did. The girls you called, they're mall rats. They're not the right girls. I know the surf girls." She introduced me to this group of young women who were hardcore surfers, who were competing. I mean, they were the right girls.
Right.
It's not that you want the story to fall apart, but there's almost always a point at which the story surprises you, disappoints you, changes on you. I think it's ultimately a part of the process and not a bad thing.
It seemed, as I was reading the book, it was obvious at some point, and to you, that you were going to write a book, right? That was the next step. And the first book was Saturday Night.
Right.
That's a whole other thing, isn't it? Even though with The Orca Thief began as a story.
Right.
But obviously then is expanded into the book.
Well, Saturday Night was a really different kind of book because it was interlinking chapters, but
sort of vignettes.
It didn't have a single narrative. What
right.
I did was I wanted to try to create a portrait of what Saturday Night in America looks like. And I zeroed in on about 18 different communities, situations, regional. In fact, I had a little spreadsheet where I would plot each of these ideas and make sure that they didn't overlap too much with another one of the places I was going to go. So I went all over the country. I spent time with a huge range of people, everything from a lounge band, a babysitter, the largest restaurant in the United States, people at a polka parlor, teenagers clubbing in Los Angeles. But then each chapter was a standalone, and what connected it was this inquiry that I was making, which is, what does Saturday Night look like in this country? And obviously it looks very different to lots of different people. So I had to kind of bear the burden of saying this holds together conceptually. It was a big challenge for a first book, for sure.
How did you write The Orchid Thief? You have the book in your hand. Someone from Hollywood takes the book. They go off. And the next thing you know, Meryl Streep is playing you.
Yeah, it was a different experience than a lot of people have.
It's just, I don't know how many times I would read that book before. That wouldn't even come to, that's a very creative way of thinking.
Well, yes. And I thought the whole thing was a joke. That it got optioned, because when this book got optioned, I thought, this is so not a movie. Like, I cannot imagine why you're optioning it. But of course, you're not going to say no. I just thought, you know, good luck. I have no idea how you're going to make this into a movie. The book was a very interior kind of meditation on orchids, on passion, on Florida. And the crime at the center of it is relatively small. No one gets killed. There are no car crashes, you know. And I remember at the time that it got options saying to my husband, you know, they're probably going to make the crime a murder. They're probably going to jazz it up and make it a Hollywood movie. The thing is that I never thought it would really get made. Most things that get optioned don't get made. That's just the way Hollywood works. So when I got a call and they said, well, we've got the script, I thought, what? Are you seriously? And then when they showed me the script, I said, seriously? This is like, no, absolutely not. I said, you're going to ruin my career, and I don't want to be a character in a movie. So, like, no. And, you know, you get a lot of the puppy dog eyes, like, really? Are you sure? Everybody else said okay. And I kept saying, no, this is nuts. And then my curiosity got the better of me. That feeling that I have, which is, I'd rather not do something. I don't always want to do things, but I don't want to not do them. So given this kind of knife edge that I was on, I finally, in the last minute, said, all right, fine. Then it was this crazy ride, and obviously the film is a very complex meditation on the nature of the book. I'm far more glad that that is the movie that got made than what I pictured, which was basically taking my book, kind of amping up the drama a bit, and making a typical Hollywood movie.
Ladies and gentlemen, Susan Orlean.
Thank you.
Susan Orlean is the author of the new book, Joyride, published by Avid Reader Press. Thanks to our producer, Sarah LaDuke. Special thanks to Skidmore College and Northshire Bookstore. Write to us at book@wamc.org. The latest on national productions programs is available via the Airwaves newsletter at wamc.org and on social media at WAMC Radio. Bookmark us for next week. And thanks for listening. For The Book Show, I'm Joe Donahue.